All right, everyone, welcome to episode 47 of the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. I am your host, as always, Reeks from Barstool Sports. I am joined today, you'll see the interview a little bit later on in the show, with Zach Harper, a.k.a. Talk Hoops. You should follow him on Twitter, who had a really, really good piece on Mo Bamba and his outlook into the NBA, which you can read over at FanRag Sports. I will tweet that out from the show's Twitter handle, which you can follow at FundamentalEST. So we talk about Mo Bamba and how he's used at Texas versus how he'll project to the NBA, some of the other top prospects, and where he stands there, and just kind of the what to remember when talking about NBA draft and the NBA game versus the collegiate game. So I think everyone liked that. Zach's one of the smartest guys out there when it comes to basketball, and is just an excellent writer. So like I said, make sure you go read his piece on Mo Bamba. Before that, I want to get into a couple things. I know this podcast is a little late. We had some troubles earlier this week. We had a couple things. Guests had to get pushed back due to inclement weather and things like that. But I am have this podcast, like I said, and on Sunday I will be recording with Mark Titus. So you'll have another podcast early in the week. Monday, and we'll get back to the two a week going forward. Some other things you might want to check on. Follow 3-on-3 Hoops on Twitter, which is the 3-on-3 that Ben and I are both on the committee for. There is some cool personal stuff going on there. So if everyone could do me the honors of following 3x3U Hoops, and you will find out what's going on there in the coming days. But like I said, I wanted to talk a little bit real quick about the college game before we get into the interview with Zach Harper. And first, I kind of want to address the whole Gary Parrish, Lindsey Schnell, Graham Couch situation regarding poll attacks. I want to start by saying what Gary does is correct. It's comedic. It's also important. You know, he doesn't call for an uprising. He doesn't call for people to go yell at whoever's ballot he, quote, attacks. Quite frankly, he's correct. The AP poll, as I've said numerous times, is a joke. It is typically made up of people that aren't dedicated to college basketball who have willingly come out and said they didn't watch a game or didn't have time to fill it out, so they just filled it out abruptly. And while the AP poll doesn't necessarily mean anything in the grand scheme of things, it changes how the perception of teams and how you talk about teams. When you say, oh, you beat a number five team in the country, that draws more attention, draws more talking points. The committee are humans, and it just kind of lingers. Again, it doesn't necessarily factor much into there, but it's still something to consider, which is why Gary's column is important, because college basketball should shape the AP poll. Gary's column doesn't shape the AP poll. It helps direct as to what's going on. If it changes it, that's good. Personally, I'd like to get rid of the AP voters and make it dedicated to those who truly watch the game and are dedicated to basketball, not ones who are football writers masquerading as basketball writers. So, you know, that's my take on that. I like I said, you know, I don't understand people freaking out on Gary. I think Lindsey's wrong. I think Graham's wrong. And if you've read Graham enough lately, that's a common theme. Or read my Twitter feeds, because he is wrong quite a bit. But going forward, there are some important announcements in college basketball. And you can read my blog on that on Barstool today on Thursday when I'm recording this. But I think most important is the start of the season next year is going to be on Tuesday, and that's the Tuesday before the second Friday. It's a step in the right direction, even if it's in the wrong direction. I've said numerous times that the season should start in December. Make it a one semester sport. March Madness just becomes April, whatever, fill in whatever a adjective you'd like to replace Madness. It's talked about more, but why I like moving it to Tuesday is pretty simple. when you start the season on Friday, you lose everything that happens in 6 hours when college football coverage starts. Then you lose everything with NFL. Do it on Tuesday, you have Wednesday morning dedicated to talking about college basketball. It's just a way to continue to grow the game. As I said, remember the season opener last year. The Indiana-Kansas game was awesome. Nobody talked about it. It was immediately lost in the shuffle. It ended at like 11 p.m. midnight Eastern. So within 12 hours, college football was starting. That's bad. That's why moving to Tuesday is good. And more importantly, it starts with the Champions Classic, meaning we get Duke versus Kentucky, Kansas versus Michigan State to start the season next year. The only people that might complain about that are North Carolina fans, are Indiana fans, UCLA fans, Arizona fans. You kind of get my point. The four blue bloods are starting the season. That will draw interest. I'm very, very anxious to see what the numbers look like next year. The other thing is a possible change to the transfer rules. Matt Schick of ESPN said, spoke with an NCAA official this week who was 95% certain transfers will soon be allowed to play immediately in basketball and football. Could be a one-time freebie plus grad transfer option. So in theory, a student athlete could play for three different schools without sitting out. I don't care. I'm completely cool with that. You know, personally, if an ideal situation would be you commit to a school. If you transfer, you do sit one out. But if a coach leaves or gets fired, you get to go wherever. To me, the biggest problem is still the fact that people can block transfers. I'd like to get rid of that. If you're that worried, you either A, stink at coaching, B, you're worried that you use the guy wrong, which refer to A, you stink at coaching, or C, you're just an egomaniac. Let a kid go wherever you want. Like, if you're that worried about him beating your program because he's going to another school in conference, you used him wrong and you should have figured something out, or he's going home for a good reason. But with this, I have zero problem with it. If you listen to this podcast enough, if you listen to me enough, you know I am very pro let players do what they want in terms of getting paid, making money off their likeness, everything like that. So I have zero problem with this. I don't want to hear about coaches. Coaches can leave without penalty. Players should be able to leave without penalty. If coaches are going to make these salaries, that's fine. The other thing I heard is how it will kill the mid-majors. And it's not going to absolutely kill the mid-majors. Will they hurt a little bit? Yes. But it's not going to be a free-for-all like everyone is making it out to be. Everyone freaking out that, you know, these schools are going to be poached 100% of the time at all times. Guess what? People will still down-transfer. That's a thing. It happens quite a bit. Look at Nevada. Look at Middle Tennessee. Look at East Tennessee State. Three mid-majors that have taken advantage of these down-transfers. So I'm cool with that. The third one is the NCAA tournament committee doing a top 16 release show again on February 11th. All for it. Give me all the transparency in the world. I think they should be doing at least three of them, if not more. So I'm all cool with that. I'm anxious to see what they think of the conferences, how they value the Big 12, how they value the American, I think are two of the more interesting ones. What about the ACC and the SEC? And then certain teams, obviously, who have weird resumes if they crack the top 16. So I'm all for that. I have zero problem with that. I'd like, if they're going to do it this way, I prefer they do it three times, the first being at the end of non-conference, the second being in mid-January, and then the third being like mid to late February. So let everyone know kind of where they stand and what they need to work on. It shows how much they value non-conference, what they value conferences, etc. So I'm for that. But we'll get into it now with Zach Harper. Please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast on all Stitcher, iTunes, everything like that. I can't stress enough how important it is on the back end of things. It allows me to do more. It allows me to reach out to get possible sponsors. If you're a sponsor, you can also hit me up without having to look at that, because I will sell my soul to whomever to help sponsor this podcast. And also, like I said, follow the show. Follow the 3-on-3 Hoops, 3x3U Hoops on Twitter. And we're going to do it now with Zach Harper. All right, and as I mentioned, we welcome on a one of my favorite basketball writers. I'm not going to say just NBA because we're talking about a college guy, which he wrote about today, and future roommate in Slovenia and or France. My guy Zach Harper, Talk Hoops. Zach, what's going on, man?
Or we may be moving to Sacramento or Orlando or Atlanta, wherever Luka ends up. That's where we're going.
Man, Sacramento, I'm down for that. Like De'Aaron Fox, Bogdanovich.
Oh, I thought you meant as a city. You're like, hey, Sacramento sounds fun. Right, no, I was like, no. I grew up there for like 26 years, and like, it's fine.
Yeah, no, that's like low on the list of where else we're talking about here. But team-wise, like, I get to cheer for Bogdanovich and Fox again. Like, yeah. I could get down with that.
Yeah, and you know, Scala Bissier is an interesting human being and an okay basketball player. Willie Cauley-Stein's a super weird guy. Like, that could be fun.
Yeah, and as a Kentucky grad, there's 84 of them just playing for the Kings alone. Like, fit
exactly.
Right in. So I'm pretty sure, like, I saw, like, they need a new, like, director of scouting or something like that who just left. And I was like, I can apply. All they do is just draft bigs from Kentucky.
Right, or now, like, I think this time around, what, they went just for, like, major schools. So they got what's his name, Justin Jackson?
Frank Mason.
Frank Mason.
Harry Giles.
Yeah, Harry Giles. Yeah, they're just like, let's just get, you know, what are the major programs? All right, pick someone from there.
Just every blue blood, let's just go there. Yep. It's my favorite strategy, along with the Bulls, of just taking whatever senior had, like, a good March.
Right.
Because that's,
it's like Garpax is like, you know, protesting of the one and done rule. Just like, nope, these guys should be seniors.
I'm convinced that's why they traded for Chris Dunn.
Absolutely.
Like, it wasn't getting rid of Jimmy Butler. It was, wait a minute, we can get another veteran college point guard? Let's go.
No, it was simply like, they're like, hey, there's a second year point guard. Like, we don't want a second year point guard. I was 29 years old. Oh, cool.
Even better. Their strategy never ceases to amaze me. And it's my favorite thing in the world. Slightly behind, staying with the Kentucky thing. Suns just drafting Kentucky point guards.
Yep. Got to do it.
Like, they're going to draft whatever the next Kentucky guard is. Like, you just send him to Phoenix.
Right, exactly. He should just go there right now.
But I wanted to bring you on. You had a really, really good piece today on Mo Bamba.
Thank you.
I think is – and you can read it at – I'll let you plug. Go ahead.
FanRag Sports, FanRagSports.com, or just it's somewhere on my Twitter. Well, don't go to my Twitter feed because it's going to be full of stuff that you don't want to read about. But, yeah, FanRagSports.com.
And I think Mo Bamba's definitely – I mean, it's a really interesting draft because I don't think it's that good outside of the top, 8 to 9, I'd say, and then it's a real drop-off, especially compared to last year where everyone's like, well, if you're still picking in the 20s, who knows who you're going to end up in? Well, Kyle Kuzma kind of looks pretty good.
Right.
But – Bamba is one of those guys who came into this year, you know, everyone talked about him as one of the top five guys. He has, what, a 7'6 or 7'7 wingspan?
7'9, I think.
7'9, yeah.
Yeah, 7'9.
And he's, I mean, that picture of him in the dunk in the, I want to say it was the December game where he
against VCU, right?
Yeah, and the ball is above the shot clock.
Right.
It's ridiculous, but he is very raw offensively, which is where I think he's an intriguing prospect because how many times do you hear young guy, raw potential, all those buzzwords that you hear? So what the hell do you make of him?
So I watched a bunch of clips of him, for a couple of days trying to figure out what I thought of him. And the first thing that comes through is just like, this dude can just defend. Like, it's not even just put him at the rim and he's going to deter shots. Like, he is actively defending pick and rolls. He's switching on everything. He's still helping in. He's digging in into the paint. He's still closing out on shooters on the perimeter. He's helping down to block shots from just about every angle. Like, he really is. And I'm with the Steve Clifford school of thought of like, hey, you know, steals and blocks don't really mean anything, right? Like, it's statistics. Like, but the one I always come back to is Darko Milicic was like top five in blocks one year, and all that meant was he got right, or he was correct, he guessed correctly like twice a game. That's all that meant, right? Like, he wasn't a good defender.
I agree with that with blocking. With steals, I think it's I go either way just because I'm a big believer in just how important live ball turnovers are, especially at the collegiate level.
Sure. Yeah, but I also look at that as like, Allen Iverson got a bunch of steals. He was a garbage defender.
Right, right.
Monte Ellis got a bunch of steals. He's a garbage defender. So, like, obviously there's a tipping point with that. You can't just go with the extremes. But for the most part, like, I think that those stats, like, don't really tell you anything about how well someone defends. but this will sound hypocritical because when Bamba is blocking 4.4 shots a game, I'm like, yep, no, that guy can defend. Like he's every bit as legitimate as that block number would, you know, mislead you towards with a lot of guys. And so it's just that. But then offensively, I kind of just expect, because I'd only seen like one or two full games of him, and up until I started looking at clips. And so I looked at, I was just thought like, oh, this guy is going to be terrible. And he actually, like, he moves really well. They don't use him in the pick and roll at all. They use him in the pick and pop a ton. His jumper doesn't fall, but I actually like the shooting motion pretty much.
Yeah, like it's not a broken shot when you watch him.
No, and with him it seems like I mean, the tricky thing with guys with long arms like that is the shooting motion is so slow, because it has to be, because there's so much ground for those arms to cover before they get to a consistent shot release.
Right.
And so like he'll have to speed that up a little bit, but for the most part it looks like when he has the ball in front of his face more, when in terms of placement when he's shooting, it looks pretty good. And every once in a while he kind of brings it to the side of his face, not in Alonzo Ball way, but in the proper way that you would do it, and it brings the ball to the side of his face a little bit, and that's when it seems to get a little more inconsistent. But I just like the shooting motion. And so a couple things you want to tweak, but a guy that big who defends that way, you know, the defense, I immediately thought of like Rudy Gobert-esque.
Sure.
In terms of just the way he was defending, and maybe a little more mobile, but not quite as good with timing, and obviously not as strong as Rudy's become since, you know, joining NBA weight programs. But that way, but then when you factor in kind of that offensive way, like, I don't know, maybe Serge Ibaka-esque in a way of where you could use him on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, because his comparisons on KenPom for seasons is Miles Turner and Hassan Whiteside. And the Whiteside one, I think, makes a little bit of sense from just the way he's kind of built, especially Whiteside early in his NBA career. You know, kind of that tall, lanky, super long arms. But Bamba, I think, has more upside offensively than Whiteside ever did.
Yeah, I agree with that, just because he moves better. Like, you know, Whiteside has great touch around the basket.
Right.
His mid-range jumper is actually not, you know, it's pretty solid. And he became so strong that he can kind of bully guys, whereas Bamba just looks more fluid in the way he moves. And
yeah, he looks like a baby deer, like when you look at him, but when he's running, he's not clumsy. He's not falling over himself like you see, because he's still he's not relatively young. He's 19. He's a little older for a freshman, but he's still. He is, like you said, he's polished in terms of what people, I think, kind of underestimate, just running up and down the court.
Yeah, and it bothered me that he doesn't do pick and rolls almost at all, because, and a part of this is I don't think that Texas team's any good, right? And so, like, he doesn't really have the talent around him to make that a part. But I would like to see how he deals with interior contact on those role plays. And you just don't really get to see any of that so far.
Yeah, and I agree with you, because I think that's one of his biggest question marks is, you know, he is long, but he's also relatively skinny. Like, he doesn't look like a guy that's just going to go down and bump people around and finish through contact, which he very well could and very well might be able to do. But it's just kind of weird to me, going back to Texas, like you said, this is the second year in a row Shaka Smart has had a top 20 big guy, and I feel like just used him wrong.
Their offense just sucks, right? And they don't have any shooting. And so, he doesn't get any spacing. He doesn't get the, you know, kind of the lane to, or the, like, these angles. When he is able to kind of just cut or like orbit the paint to be a dump off or safety valve option, he's a monster. But he just doesn't get a lot of those opportunities, and you're left just wondering, because he just ends up taking a lot of jumpers and they're not falling. So you're left wondering, at least I was left wondering, like, you know, am I just tricking myself into thinking there's a lot of offensive potential there, or is there actually a lot of offensive potential there?
How important is, because, you know, this podcast is mostly college basketball dominated with listeners, but the game's so different between the college and the NBA. And
right.
I think, you know, most 50% of people can agree that both are great in their own right. The other 50% are split on, no, you must watch one or the other.
Right, exactly.
How important is it to differentiate how he's playing at Texas versus how he'll be used really with any NBA team in terms of just, like you mentioned, spacing of the floor? Because how many times you hear, oh, how is this guy not better in college? And it's like, well, he played with four non-pros.
Right, exactly. I mean, look at Kyle Kuzma, right? Like, he was fine in college, but yeah, he didn't look anything like this.
No, he was an above-average college player.
Right, and just the NBA game is quicker, it's more spaced, he's allowed to do more, it seems. And some of it is, like, I don't think you can just blame him. Like, he's developed in this time between his college season and his rookie season. He developed between his college season and summer league. Like, he's really worked on these skills and worked hard, and so – you know, that should be a credit to him as well. But the NBA game, especially for someone like Bamba, like him having more space to operate, even if he can't shoot, let's say he can't shoot at all at the NBA level, and it never clicks in that way. You can still space the floor with him because he's an intelligent cutter. He's an intelligent guy in terms of spacing. Like, I always look at it, the 2011 Mavericks played Tyson Chandler, and they spaced the floor better than just about anybody. And Tyson Chandler can't shoot a lick. But he was so good at knowing when to cut, when to kind of, you know, fake his defender into the way so they would clear a screen for a weak side shooter, any of this stuff. Like, he was so smart with that. And I think Bamba, at worst, is that kind of an offensive player where he's just intelligently finding those little angles to make an impact.
That's, you know what, I never thought about Chandler for him just because I don't know why I didn't, but that makes a lot of sense, especially that's where I wish you could see Bamba in the pick and roll more, right? Like,
right.
I remember, like, Chandler with, now obviously he got lucky by having Chris Paul, but
sure.
those old New Orleans days of just running him in the high pick and roll with the two of them. Like, that's, I think, something that Bamba could do, because even at the NBA level, he's still going to be a freak athlete, like with that wingspan and everything.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's kind of where I would just love to see him in the pick and roll more, is just to see, how is he going for these lobs, right? Like, what is his, you know, how balanced is he? Because some big guys just aren't balanced at all in that stuff. And so it becomes just this, you know, this crapshoot of throw a lob and let's hope he catches it. Like, right. How are his hands? Like, I think he has good hands, but we don't get to see that aspect of it much. So it's really, you're kind of just guessing. And so playing with a good point guard, playing with space and playing in a system where he can kind of, you know, set a screen or slip a screen and just go right down the middle of the lane and just jump over someone, you know, how confident is he? And some of that will be, he needs to get stronger because, of course, he's a 19-year-old big man. They all need to get stronger. But, you know, how does he handle those moments at the basket? And we just don't see that at all.
Going back real quick to what we both kind of talked about with the game being different at the NBA level, who do you think that ends up benefiting more? Is it wings and those kind of stretch players like Kuzma, or is it the bigs of the world? Or, you know, I'm assuming it for point guards, it's still relatively the same, unless you're maybe Dennis Smith Jr., who had to deal with three teammates inside the paint at all times. But
right.
Who, I guess, what kind of player typically sees the biggest adjustment or helps their game the most just by going to the NBA?
So this kind of spans every position, but I would say attackers.
Okay.
Like, so if you're a wing, if you're a point guard, if you're a center who, you know, is constantly rolling to the basket or cutting off, you know, off the baseline to get a dunk or whatever, just those players who are constantly moving towards the basket in order to generate points, because the college game is it's a lot slower, right? And it's a little sloppier because your teammates aren't all pros. And then and the spacing is just, it's just not what it is, because guys can't shoot as well. And, you know, just up and down most college games. And because of that, you can kind of just pack things in a little bit. And so at the NBA level, those guys who, you know, those wings who are attacking the paint, those point guards who are attacking off pick and rolls, big men in pick and rolls, like all those guys, just having that extra space, you get to see what kind of a ridiculous athlete they could be. Like Donovan Mitchell, right? Donovan Mitchell looks like, I mean, he was good.
Yeah, he was like an all, you know, all conference player.
Yeah, he was really good.
In the short race for ACC Player of the Year, but
he looks like Dwayne Wade right now.
Yeah,
like, I mean, good Dwayne Wade, right? Like, not old Dwayne Wade. He looks like Dwayne Wade right now. Like, it, because that space and that quickness, he's allowed to just be an athlete a lot more. And I just think for the most part, you're dealing with better player development, and so that work off the court too, it just means that much more.
So getting back to Bamba, he is, you know, like we mentioned, he's tall, athletic, but still, you know, I would say most people would consider him lanky, right?
Yeah, right.
So are you worried at all in terms of rebounding? Because he's actually a phenomenal defensive rebounder. Like, he is the 28th best defensive rebounder in the country based on percentage. That's from KenPom. But, you know, offensively, he's 108. Is, again, though, just with the collegiate level being, you know, he's playing against guys that are 6'8 centers, 6'7 centers at some of the smaller schools that he's playing in the non-conference. Like, Lipscomb Center isn't going to the NBA.
Right, exactly.
Are you worried at all because with this revolution of small ball era and the fact that you can use him here as, you know, your five spot with his rebounding, with his size, or is it one that he's just – did you see something with that?
I think he just – it's just one of those players, and this sounds like, you know, a little hacky, but he just knows how to rebound.
Yeah.
Like, I think there will be a lot of adjusting he has to do because he'll get pushed around just because he's so thin or so lanky. And so he'll have to kind of strengthen his base and be able to, you know, hold his ground a little bit more. But there are also those rebounders who are really good rebounders, like Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard didn't box out anybody.
Yeah, just
Dwight
Howard got it.
Yeah, he just went up and got – I think Bamba will be that kind of a rebounder where he just goes up and gets it, like a young DeAndre Jordan before he got really strong, right? And now DeAndre is just shoving people out of the way to get rebounds.
Yeah, no.
It's not getting called, but like, he became someone who is a physical rebounder. I think Bamba will eventually become that, but right now he's just a guy who's going to go get it.
Right. Okay, so that makes sense because that to me is kind of the thing to watch because he is – you know, he's a good jumper. He obviously has a wingspan, but – again, all it takes is a grown man to put two hands on him, and where does he go?
Right, and look, you look at like someone like Kristaps. Kristaps is not a very good rebounder, right?
Yeah, no, like that's his biggest knock, right? Everyone just yells he's 7'3" and averages 6-7 boards a game.
Right, exactly. And so, I think Bamba is a more aggressive rebounder than Kristaps is just by nature. But yeah, like there could be those problems where. Where maybe he's only grabbing 8 rebounds a game instead of the 12. And so, like, right. You would need him to be more of a league leader to keep that because that's another big part of defending, too, that maybe goes under-talked about. Like you have to end the possession.
Right, right.
And so, like, you can defend great, and then you're just giving up offensive rebounds, and none of it matters. So I think Bamba will – to truly be an elite rebounder or a elite defender like a Rudy Gobert, you have to end those possessions, not just with block shots, but with rebounds.
Now, obviously, a large part of – I wouldn't say a large part. A talked-about part of the draft and success of players are where do you actually end up, right? Like, there are teams that you want to go to that are just good fits for them. Is there a good or bad fit for Bamba out of the top, you know, 8-9 teams maybe that are going to be in the top half of the lottery?
I would hate it if he went to Orlando. I think that
lack of shooting,
lack of direction. They just seem to just accumulate. I'm sure there's going to be moves at some point, but he'd be on the same team as Vucevic and Biombo, I mean, and they just seem to like, they get like these sort of intriguing guys like Aaron Gordon, super intriguing, but he's also playing with Vucevic and Elfrid Payton and Evan Fournier, and who cares?
Right.
And so, like, I would hate to see him go somewhere like that. I would worry about him going to Sacramento just because they don't have – they don't have a great history of really nailing the draft and development.
Plus, where does he end up with all those bigs that they already have, assuming no move?
Exactly. But, like, in terms of good fits, I mean, I'd love to see him in Dallas. I'd love to see him in Atlanta. I'd love to see him in Boston.
Oh, Atlanta, you know, would be fun with him and John Collins.
Him and John Collins and Dennis Schroeder, you know, for now.
Just throw the ball at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, they might dunk on each other on any given possession. It's very possible.
John Collins is a bad enough defender to let that happen.
It's true, he is. Or, you know, Cleveland.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think LeBron's going to be there when he's there, but I think, you know, that's a pretty good rebuilding piece. To start out with, and as they get terrible again and start trying to build back up.
Yeah, because who knows who end up they, you know, what they end up with, who they don't end up with, everything like that. So where do you think there's a, you know, I mentioned in the beginning, how many do you think players-wise coming in are in the draft, like a true, like, you know, tier one type player when you're looking at the guys coming into the draft of, okay, these guys are all kind of grouped together. It doesn't matter if they go one or five. They're similar types of prospects.
Yeah, I mean, Luka, obviously, that's our guy. Oh, yeah. Luka's up there.
Well, he's,
Marvin.
He's tier us, and then there's tier one.
Exactly. Tier us, then tier one, Marvin Bagley. He's just confusing to me because I don't know if he's not allowed to shoot jumpers or if he's just not shooting jumpers.
It's
right.
I had him as my number one going into the season. I still had him number one, but it's like I think he may end up number three with eight and number one. Like I just think those two will switch watch with Luka at two regardless. Like to me, he's just stuck there. But
yeah.
Man, Bagley is, I agree, weird because it's everyone's talking about his defense, and it's like, well, okay, and then he had a decent individual defensive game against NC State, that weird wingspan, but like you said, his. Krzyzewski worries me a little bit with these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, this is a terrible sample size, but like, I saw him play at the Drew League up close, and like, he could shoot.
Yeah.
You know, like, granted, it's the Drew League. It's not the NBA, but like, he had a pretty good shooting stroke. And it confuses me that he, like, I guess he is such a monster in the post at the college level. It's just what you go with.
I think he'd still run a couple sets just to bring him up and.
Yeah, but you'd also think that Bamba would get a lob at the rim on a pick and roll, and that doesn't happen, right?
I think Texas's coach is a little overrated. Everyone knows who I'm talking about.
That's fair. DeAndre Ayton is just super intriguing to me. Porter, I guess. Porter, we're just going off of
you just hope
reputation.
He's
so right. Yeah, you hope he's healthy and the reputation's legit. I'm talking myself into Trae Young as one of these guys.
I'm glad you brought that up because I don't know how you can at this point.
I know.
Like, trying to be
just,
like a contrarian.
It's just so overwhelming.
Like you can say whatever you want about him. Like he's playing in whatever system and whatnot, but he's putting up numbers that college basketball has never seen before in the best conference with playing against pros.
Like, and he's just ridiculous. Like, I mean, so if he, like, not obviously, if he plays like this at the NBA level, he's probably not going to play like this at the NBA level, but if he's 80% of this at the NBA level,
like, he's fine.
That's a number one guy.
Yeah, for sure. Like, he's one of those where if you start him off the bench as your backup point guard rookie year and he's putting up, you know, just a microwave coming off the bench, I think people are going to be pretty happy. And then you develop him into. To the starting point guard, because guess what? There's a lot of spots that fit Young too in the early part of the draft. Like everyone besides maybe Sacramento and Dallas.
Yeah, and then I mean, even then, you could probably talk yourself into no. We should go with Trae Young instead of DeAndre Fox, right? Or De'Aaron Fox, or instead of Dennis Smith Jr.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not willing to give up on Fox, like, you know, 1 year in or anything like that.
Oh, so, I don't think it's giving up. I think it's just looking at Trae Young.
Right.
That guy is the person we want.
I feel like you could run Young and Smith together.
Yeah, I mean, that's small, but... Well, also, I mean, Rick Carlisle, currently, like, one of the best lineups in the NBA right now is Dwight Powell, Dirk Nowitzki, J.J. Barea, Devin Harris, and Yogi Ferrell. That lineup is killing right now. It makes zero sense. So, yeah, like, he probably can do something with Smith and Trae Young together.
Yeah, like, I trust Carlisle enough to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think those, like, six guys.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I think there's, like, six number one picks right now.
I mean, that's not bad. Because then there's about three or four guys in tier two, and then it's just throw something at a dartboard and hope for the
right.
best.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So where do you think Porter kind of compares to the rest of them? Do you think he's maybe on the back end of that list?
Yeah, probably, just because, well, one, the injury, you know, like he's going to have a clean bill of health on the physicals for people to feel confident in taking him higher than a lot of these other guys they get to see so much. And two, like, I don't know if he's not – if he's not kind of like a point forward type, yeah, exactly. And so, like, I think, like, it's in a positionless NBA, you kind of need him to figure out what his position is.
Right.
It sounds hypocritical, but that's kind of just what I think about him right now.
Yeah, that's fair. So what's your general – well, I'll end with what's your general outlook on Bamba? Who do you think he ends up – not necessarily game-wise being, but kind of mimicking we'll say like, you know, career outlook type of player and going forward. What how do you think his game projects to the NBA?
I mean, probably like a really good rebounding Serge Ibaka.
Okay.
Which is a fantastic player. Probably not a guy you're building around, right? But
if he's your three, you're fine.
Yeah, if he's the third guy on the totem pole, like you're probably, you know, a top five defensive team and you're dangerous in the playoffs on offense.
And then you're likely going to lose your best player to a rival later in the year.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
In an article.
In an article.
Yeah. So thanks a lot for coming on, man. I urge everyone to go read Zach's column on Bamba. I will tweet it out as well from the show site and my site because it's really good. You can find Zach on Talk Hoops. And Zach, where can everyone find your podcast that everyone should go subscribe, listen, and review to?
Just search Talk Hoops in Apple iTunes or any of those podcasting feeds. Go to leveragethechat.com, and we've got all of our podcasts up there. And then, read at FanRag Sports.
All right, thanks a lot, man.